love you.
Hello, my name's Tom Walker. Welcome to That'll Be The Day. In this podcast, I'm talking to a visually impaired man who really is forging a fabulous career on stage and screen. But before we hear from Venetia Blind, who's a visually impaired drag queen, if you like the music at the start of this podcast, it's a track called That'll Be The Day by the Liverpool band The Vow. And as always, I'll be featuring a track by The Vow at the end of this podcast. To find out which one I've chosen, stay tuned. Now, Jake Sawyers from Cardiff is only 27, but he's already making quite a name for himself. By his own admission, Jake has always loved being the centre of attention. And when he goes on stage to do his drag queen act, the audience's eyes are very definitely drawn to him. But there's more to Jake than that. When I spoke to him the other day on Zoom, we started by talking about the reaction he's received to some recent publicity.
the response to the article has been so overwhelming. I've had so many messages the last week, and it's been really, really good.
Really? How many messages have you had, and what are people saying?
Oh, I've had a few people asking for makeup tips. I've had people asking me to appear on podcasts like this one. And yesterday I had the most exciting one. I was sent, I don't know much about it yet, so it's quite a new development, but I'm going to be sent my first box of free PR makeup something. So feeling very famous and very overwhelmed this week.
Brilliant. You started off, though, training to be an actor, didn't you?
I did, yes. I studied at the University of Wales, Trinity St David, which is a very long title, and that's in Carmarthen, which is West Wales. And I'm from Port Talbot, which is South Wales, so my university was about 40 minutes down the road, so far enough away to sort of get my independence, but close enough to, you know, go home and wash my towels and wash my clothes and things like that. So yeah, university was great. Graduated with an acting degree in 2016 and moved to Cardiff then with my partner, who I met a few years previously when we were studying in college, when we were both 16. And we both went to university together, and now we're both living in Cardiff together, and we're engaged. So we're both actors, drag queens, freelancers. So we're just sort of living that life where we just keep hustling and getting new opportunities, which is really exciting and keeps things, definitely keeps things fresh.
Well, as a freelancer, I understand the word hustling only only too well. What was university like for you? Did they make the adjustments that you needed as a visually impaired person?
Yeah, so I was really torn whether or not to go to university. I left secondary school, and my choices were either go to college and do all the sciences and history, or just do one big BTEC in acting. And I went for the BTEC in acting, met some lovely people, and a lot of us decided to go to the same university. So quite a rare experience, not the experience you often hear of university. You often hear people going very far away by themselves, but I went, you know, somewhere quite close with a lot of people I knew. So that was really comforting for me. And I had visited the university before, spoke to the lecturers, got my disability students allowance sorted. So for me, it was quite a smooth experience, but I know I'm sort of one of the lucky ones. So it was either university for me or go work in the Apple store. And I think I made the right decision. I still own every Apple product now, but not because I'm employed.
What adjustments did you need at university?
So my course, I was quite particular in the course that I chose. I wanted something really practical, and, you know, acting definitely ticks that box. So, you know, there wasn't a hell of a lot of reading. It was mostly practical things, which, you know, I'm fine with because I've been acting all my life. I've been sort of in that world. So it didn't take much adjustment for me. The adjustments that were made were all the lovely things I had to help me do my course. So I had my big printer, my screen, my iPad, my laptop. And then I did have some sort of admin support, which I sort of stopped using half a year in because I found that it was easier for me to adjust my own things and sort of just download ebooks and get the money reimbursed than have to go somewhere early in the morning to have somebody just photocopy it from A4 to A3.
Before we talk about your acting career, what was school like for you?
I had a great time in school. So I went to a mainstream school, which had a visually impaired unit. So I had teachers, teaching assistants, QVTIs, sitting next to me in every lesson, which, you know, is a very unique experience when you're growing up, going through puberty, having somebody sit next to you for all of your lessons. But, you know, I managed it fine. I sort of found my friendship group a few years into secondary school. They were really nice, and we, you know, we still talk and things like that. So yeah, it was okay for me. It was as okay as school gets, I think. So I'm really lucky about that. And I had great support from my parents and the rest of my family and my friends and all of those QTV and the QVTIs. So yeah, I definitely, you know, always thank them down the line for sort of who I've turned out to be.
I had the great pleasure, or maybe not, of going to a residential special school, which was variable in the experience, I have to say. I've done quite a few stories on visually impaired people in mainstream, and some, like yourself, seem to have done quite well and been fine, but others just seem to be sort of sitting in the corner and not getting involved with any of the fun or the mischief that's taking place in the classroom. Were you able to get involved in all that sort of stuff?
I always find school a really funny one, because I think looking at it with hindsight, it was all fine, and I sort of took from it what I could. But I know at the time, you know, I did feel very isolated. I had a very small group of friends that I didn't find until a few years in. So yeah, I didn't really get involved in a lot of that sort of school stuff, all the mischief. And, you know, I've definitely got some horrendous stories of teachers just not preparing work or just totally, you know, discriminating against me. But I think because it's been so long, I've just sort of decided to take the good parts and just remember those, but then keep fighting then for, you know, other people to get those rights and things. So yeah, such a strange one when it comes to school.
When did the acting actually first start for you, Jake? When did you first think, actually, I rather like this?
So I've always been quite an attention seeker. So it's always been in me. But I'd say the point for me where it started was, I think I was in about year seven, so about 11, 12 years old. And this is such a diva story. Our school was putting on a High School Musical. I was in year seven. I thought, I'm going to audition for that. I'm going to get the main part and it's going to be amazing. Auditioned, got put in the chorus, which is fair enough because I was just an 11-year-old. And I decided then, no, I'm never going to act again. And I hate this. This is ridiculous. It's such a little diva. And then the visually impaired unit, the head QVTI said to me, oh, we've got a group coming in. They're called UCAN Productions. And they sort of do drama workshops for young blind children and young people. And you can bring a friend along as well if you want. So it's not just a blind exclusive thing. Sounded great. But at the time I was like, no, I'm at the ripe age of 11-year-old. I've retired from acting. I'm not doing it. So I missed the first few sessions. And then I was dragged along to one by force and sort of loved it from there. Ever since, I've been doing acting workshops with UCAN. Got for over 10 years now, and I actually work for them now as well as a workshop leader, as a visually impaired workshop leader. So it's that full circle moment of, you know, teaching the younger generation what I had when I was that age. So I think, you know, I've been doing that for so long, and that has definitely given me such a grounding in this sort of, you know, sector of being disabled and being an actor and advocating for your needs and all that lovely stuff.
You've mentioned there very honestly that you were an attention seeker.
Yes.
What other forms did that take? How else did you seek attention?
This is a good one. When I was the same age, 11, 12, myself and my brother were watching Blue Peter on BBC One, and they announced a competition called the Can You Cook It competition, and the prize was to win the opportunity to cook on Blue Peter every month, to do that classic, here's one I made earlier, presenting live. We both entered the competition, myself and my brother. I got an audition, he didn't. And then a long story short, I ended up winning the competition. So I won it against, I think, 12,000 kids in the UK, and it was all televised. And there were different rounds. We went to this big residential house and did all these crazy challenges. I think I had to milk a goat while talking about it. I had to talk about food on a roller coaster, and it all sort of ended with this dramatic final three in the Blue Peter studio where we'd make a, what did we make? a souffle. We made a souffle for James Martin and all the presenters. And then I ended up winning the competition. So at that age of 11, 12, I was going up to London every month to cook live on BBC One Blue Peter, which is crazy. And when I tell people that, it just blows their mind that I did that at that age. And, you know, it blows my mind as well, because I haven't done a lot of live TV since then. But I think, you know, being youthful, you just have that bravery.
How did they treat you as a visually impaired person? I mean, presumably they knew that you're visually impaired.
Yeah, so I think a very small group of people knew. I don't think the presenters knew. I think just a handful of producers knew, but I know it was, you know, it was mentioned in the final edit and things, but I remember it just being a really pleasant experience at the time. And I think that's what gave me the grounding to actually pursue this career, because, you know, I've definitely had more discrimination as an adult and more hardships. I think, you know, being a blind child for me was so much easier than being a blind adult. I'm sort of only now, you know, in the last 10 years, learning how hard that can be compared to my childhood, because I was so well supported. So I think that has its ups and downs, that, you know, I wasn't sort of, you know, my back wasn't turned to how hard it could be, but, you know, I definitely had a textbook experience of what it should be like for a blind child growing up.
That's really positive, isn't it? I mean, I know what you mean about the industry generally. I mean, the media is very similar in a lot of ways. And certainly I've developed quite a lot of resilience, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Resilience. I think for me, it's a cocktail of seeing the funny side of everything, just being, you know, generally humorous. And then also being from Port Albert, working class background. So I just, you know, I don't take any of it from anyone.
You've just got to speak up, haven't you?
Yeah, you do. And it's such a hard skill to master. And, you know, I say master, I haven't mastered it at all. It's, you know, it's a case by case situation on how you disclose your sight loss, how you advocate for your needs. And it is about speaking up, but God, that can be so exhausting sometimes. And I, you know, I teach a lot of self-advocacy workshops to young people, and, you know, I want to make sure that I don't just go in and say, right, you need to say this, 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 this. I want to, you know, it's everyone has their own way of, you know, their own relationship with their sight loss. So I think it's really important to sort of empower that as well.
I don't think fully sighted people and just non-disabled people generally appreciate just how tiring it can be when you're constantly having to advocate for your own needs.
As sight impaired people, we're so good at, you know, finding efficient ways to get things done, but just people can't see that skill. They don't look at it as a skill. They just see a sort of, you know, a little bit of inspiration, or look, they're getting on with it, well done. But that's just simply not the case. I think we gain so many skills being blind and sight impaired.
And quite often when we are advocating for our needs, we can sometimes be accused of being over assertive. People like to regard us as this inspiring disabled person, but in fact, they don't want us to be too assertive.
No, yeah, they definitely want us to fit into that box. And it's, you know, I've listened to a few episodes of this podcast, which I didn't know about, which is great. I've, you know, through the drag article, I've had so many messages saying, oh, it's great to see, you know, sight impaired drag queen doing their thing. And then they've told me sort of what their art is. And I've responded with exactly the same, like, you know, I didn't know that existed in the blind community. So this has been such a great experience for me to find, you know, new streams of blind art, blind podcasts, blind writers, because, you know, we're often not given the time. So it's really good that people have, you know, come out and shared that with me. But what I've definitely learned listening to this podcast and, you know, all these messages is that just there's so much talent there. With blind and visually impaired people, and we're not doing it to prove ourselves, we're not doing it for anyone else, we're doing it because, you know, we're good at it. And that can often be seen as cocky sometimes. And I was talking about this on one of the self-advocacy workshops I run, and, you know, that cockiness isn't cockiness, because if I can't, you know, be proud of what I do, you know, as a blind person, often a lot of other people aren't going to be. And, you know, I'm lucky that I'm very well supported, but, you know, you've got to show up for yourself. You've got to really believe in what you can do as well.
Before we talk about your drag act, tell me about your other acting roles and, you know, the roles that you've actually performed.
So through You Can Productions, which is the company I work for, we do drama workshops. We also run visual awareness training, and we do a lot of shows as well. So I've done a lot of productions with fully blind casts, which has been really fun. I think we did one show where we didn't even have a physical script. We just had an audio script, and we've explored topics like disability, hate crime. We've worked abroad. So that's been really great for my acting career, especially the theatre side of it all.
What are the challenges that the totally blind actors face, those people that you've worked with? Because I'm guessing being familiar with the stage and the physical dangers maybe that might lurk.
Yes, we've got a good few systems in place. So we always start any rehearsal, any performance, by taking a good half hour, if not more, just to literally walk around the space, feel everything, work out every step. And that's something that I've always done from a young age working with UCAN. And I remember when I wasn't in a rehearsal room with UCAN and we didn't do that, I found it, you know, really shocking that, oh, we're not going to work out where we are. So that's one of many tips that we do, is just that. And we, you know, we like to integrate a lot of things as well. So, you know, we'll put, tactile marks on a stage. We're not very apologetic about that. You know, that's sort of the aesthetic of being a blind actor sometimes. So it's just being really creative with it as well.
And I'm guessing for you, having some useful sight, that you're probably fairly comfortable on a stage, would I be right in saying, or do you need some means of regulating where you go as well?
Yeah, for me, the biggest challenge when on a stage is definitely those extreme lighting changes. And I notice it every year in winter. I think I've definitely got worse at seeing in the dark. So, you know, I've had a lot of experience on the stage, but that is something that will always trip me up. And I will always end up walking in to something, mostly backstage. Once I'm on stage, I'm sort of at home because I'm better in well-lit areas than not so well-lit areas. So, yeah, the stage is sort of a very comfortable place for me. And also when those lights are banging your eyes and you've got a slow cataract developing, you can actually see the audience. So it's just like you're sort of performing, you know, to an empty room sometimes, and you've just got those nice audible reactions from the audience. And that's something I really like. I don't get put off by all those staring eyes.
Tell me about the drag act then. For people who don't fully know what it is, explain what it involves.
So as a freelancer, I'll have a go at anything. And I moved to Cardiff in 2017 with my partner. And at that time, RuPaul's Drag Race was on the TV. And RuPaul's Drag Race is a sort of reality talent show where they bring a group of drag queens on and they do challenges and they do all these amazing runway looks. And it's hosted by RuPaul, who is sort of like one of the original, you know, huge drag queen supermodels of the world. And they compete to be, you know, the next Drag Race superstar. So we were watching that and we had never really heard of drag that much before. Coming from Port Talbot, there isn't a sort of LGBT scene or a drag scene. So we were like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Haven't seen this before at all. Then we moved to Cardiff and discovered that there was a local drag scene. So we were going out to watch all these amazing, hilarious drag queens on the weekend, and we were watching RuPaul in the week. So we were drag obsessed at one point, and, you know, we still are, clearly. But then a call out came from the Wales Millennium Centre, one of the biggest theatres in Cardiff, they were hosting a scratch night, which involved, if you want to have a go at drag, come here, we're going to have a lovely audience, it's not going to be intimidating. And it was actually run by a local queen who we knew. So we thought, if we don't do it now, we never will. We'd talked about it before, but what always put me off was, I don't want to go to a really busy club with, you know, people who've just wandered in off the streets while I'm standing up there in a dress trying to sing. You know, that's daunting for anyone, but especially somebody with a sight impairment. So I thought, theatre, I'm used to the theatre. I've been to the Wales Millennium Centre before. I know the host, have a go. So I went. My drag character, who I came up with, is Venetia Blind. And I've sort of been performing ever since. The act includes me singing parody songs about the lived experience of being visually impaired. I've got one song about, you know, when people grab our arms to cross the road sometimes and just drag us around. I've got another song called Inspiration Porn Star, which is sort of exploring that side of, you know, being an inspirational blind person. And that's inspired by a TED talk that I watched. And yeah, it's just a really fun way to educate people about sight loss and the lived experience. But for me, it's also a really fun way of expressing that side of my life as well, because I run a lot of visual awareness training. I work in the sight loss sector as well as being an actor. And, you know, I'm 27 now, but, you know, when I was starting out in all this, running training courses as a 20-year-old can be quite daunting and sometimes a bit boring, just constantly talking about being blind. So doing it in this draggy, fun way where I'm just on stage singing about it, wearing a dress with a full face of makeup is just really empowering for me, just as, you know, as it might be entertaining for the audience.
And I'm guessing the audience obviously knows that you're visually impaired. I mean, the name, as much as anything, gives them a clue.
Well, you'd be surprised. I do sort of have a little stand-up intro where I tell the audience that I'm sight impaired. And, you know, I've often performed to, you know, I perform in sort of conferences and anywhere that will have me, really. But, you know, I think most typical drag queens will just perform in sort of LGBT venues, in clubs, singing cabaret, which is sort of my favorite drag to watch, but isn't really what I do. Because, you know, if I was to take my act to, you know, just a random Friday night in an LGBT bar, I don't think the message would get across as much as I'd like. So I often find myself performing in specialist, you know, events about disability and things like that. But when I have performed in more mainstream venues, you know, the questions I've had, you know, really funny. People are convinced that I'm not blind. People ask, like, oh, you know, is it just your drag character that's blind and you're not? And I just think that would be really insensitive, just to fake this blind person.
That's hilarious, isn't it? That people might even think that, really. That's quite good. I mean, more generally, what reaction do you get from your audience then? I mean, I'm guessing that, you know, once they've cottoned on, they're probably quite positive, are they?
Yeah, definitely. Sort of my first show was that Scratch Night in the Wales Millennium Centre. And at the same time, I was also working with Extant, which is, you know, the UK's one of the biggest blind and visually impaired led theatre companies. I was working with them on their Pathways programme, which gave me the opportunity as an actor to go up to London every week and sort of go to a drama school or work with a practitioner. And through that course, which was amazing, I was linked up with a mentor, and they paired me with Amelia Cavallo, who was another blind drag performer. And they approached me as my mentor and said, look, I'm going to apply for some funding to start up my own company, and we're going to explore what it's like to be blind and do drag. So long story short, I went up to London for, I think it was a good 2 weeks with Amelia and the rest of the Unsightly Drag crew, which was just a group of visually impaired people who wanted to try drag, who had done a bit of drag before like me. And we just spent 2 weeks in a studio working out how to make our drag accessible to us, how to make it accessible to audiences. And we ended up putting on a show called Unsightly Drag, which featured us all. And I think the majority of the audience was disabled. So that for me was one of the best reactions we've had, because, you know, the people in the audience understood what we were trying to say. We felt really comfortable doing it. So that was really great. But I recently did a show in UCL in London. I was invited up by the Welsh Society to perform, myself and my partner, who also does drag. We were invited up to perform. And, you know, it wasn't advertised really that, oh, Venetia Blind is coming, she's disabled, come and see her. It was just, you know, a very typical poster. But a lot of disabled students turned up because they'd, you know, maybe, you know, Googled me or whatever. So it was a really organic experience to have such a mixed crowd at that event. And it felt really good to have, you know, people who, you know, able-bodied people coming, disabled people coming, students coming. And I just had, you know, a really good reaction from that show. So that's sort of the last one I did that really has inspired me to carry on doing it.
What advice would you give to visually impaired people who are thinking of acting as a career?
I think it's important that you, you know, do go to drama school audition and sort of prepare yourself for how difficult that can be. Definitely, you know, it's not easy for anyone getting into drama school, but it's definitely not easy if you've got a sight impairment, and that's not fair at all. And, you know, there should be definitely more stuff in place to get that representation in drama schools, because, you know, they are famous for being quite exclusive. But then the other advice I'd give is just to really practice that advocating for your needs, making them known, having a sort of really quick fire way of telling people what you need, because, you know, not everyone knows what you're going to need, and just making sure that those needs are met as well.
You've talked about discrimination on a couple of occasions while we've been chatting. What do you think the answer is? How can you improve the drama industry, if you like, so that it's more representative and there are more disabled people, you know, getting opportunities?
I do this visual awareness training. I make online content about being blind, and I've sort of come to learn that you can talk about it all you like, but what I think really, really makes the difference and really hits home for people is just seeing it and that organic process of it. So I was on a BBC One comedy at the end of last year. Character wasn't blind. It wasn't mentioned at all that I was really blind. But then when people found out, it just left more of a lasting impact that, you know, he's just doing it.
So that was Jake Sawyers, and thanks very much to Jake for his time. I really enjoyed listening to his story. Okay, which track by The Vow have I chosen? Well, it was pretty obvious. From Venetia Blind to Venus Girl.
Who lives in a world like this? Transmitting in the emptiness. When all hope is long gone, you've no faith in anyone. She came in the name of love, the one thing there's so little of. Reeled in the hard lines, laid down the good times. Venus girl, she fell down to earth from a great height. A meteorite in my world explodes in my mind's eye. She never makes a move in haste. Good things come to he who waits. She brings the sunshine, rolls out the good times. Venus girl, the brightest of stars in the night sky, the soul satellite of my world, explodes in my mind's eye. She's low with love, but she can't get enough of the stuff that our dreams are all made of. Venus girl, she fell down to earth from a great height. A meteorite in my world explodes in my mind's eye. She exploded my mind's eye. Yes, she exploded my mind's eye.